Hi, welcome to the Imperial Healthcare Business Podcast. My name is Ibe Adedure and I'm your host for today. Today we'll be discussing digital transformation projects in the healthcare industry, and I've got two wonderful guests with me today. Our first guest is Patricia Vass. She is a project manager and works for Sectra, a medical IT company, and she's currently undertaking her MBA at Imperial College Business School. Her extensive experience varies from being a clinician to having customer service, account management, and operational skills in the medical digital IT world. Our second guest is Dr. Nabil Kanji. He's an accomplished healthcare professional who started out his career as a nurse and then pivoted to pharmacy, and now he works in the digital healthcare space. He has worked for Fortune 500 companies such as McKesson, and he currently works for InfoHealth, which is the Canadian digital healthcare company. So very well.
Thanks for the invite.
So we'll start off with you, Nabil. My first question is, can you just tell us a little bit about your journey into sort of digital medical IT?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I started off my career as a registered nurse. I worked in mental health. And at the time, to be honest, I went into it straight out of high school. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I just knew I wanted to go into healthcare, and nursing kind of provided the venue to try out a few different things, get to see, you know, different departments and things like that. And I ended up really liking the pharmacy aspect of it. And in Canada, pharmacy is kind of like a second entry program. You need a couple of years of a university degree or a full degree to enter different schools. So I went to University of Waterloo after that, which was a co-op program, got to try out a lot of different things there. So I worked for the government, Health Canada. I'm located in Canada. I worked in research. I worked in community pharmacy, hospitals. And then after I graduated, I started off my career in long-term care. And over here, the way it works in Canada is that you get, you know, different companies get contracts for different homes. So, you know, going to homes, doing medication reviews, teaching the nurses and the physicians about different drugs, safe practices, things like that. Then I had the opportunity to work at a clinic, and this was in an interprofessional environment. So it would have been with social workers, physicians, occupational therapists, et cetera, you name it. And I got to kind of put on my pharmacy and nursing hat that way. And then I had an opportunity to work at McKesson. Actually, they recruited me because of my kind of unique background. And they said, you know, you're building clinical programs here. Do you want to build it nationally? I said, sure, why not? So, and we know McKesson is a Fortune 500 company, quite large. Used to be known as Celesia in Europe, or Lloyds in UK. Lloyds Pharmacy is McKesson. Got to build programs there. I got to work, you know, with the marketing team. It was a kind of a clinical marketing role, but I was kind of like the jack of all trades, master of none. Got to build programs out for, it was about 3,000 different pharmacies, because under the McKesson banner, there's a Guardian ID, Remedies, Medicine Shop, Proxim, and Uniprix in Quebec. So I got to launch, you know, a diabetes program, and a program with marketing elements, you know, educate clinical elements, work with the technology division on that front. That was kind of my first taste with kind of working with technology, although in healthcare, you're kind of always working with technology these days. Then after that, I worked at Ascensia Diabetes Care, former division of Bayer. Got to launch different programs that actually got adopted into different jurisdictions around the world. Worked in hospitals. And then my current role is working at Canada Health InfoWay as a senior manager of prescriber relations and employment. And currently, I'm working predominantly with the e-prescribing program, but with a couple of other initiatives and deploying it across the country.
That sounds like an amazing CV. And just for our listeners who are not familiar with the Canadian healthcare system, just explain what InfoWay company is, because it's a government organization, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's a not-for-profit, vendor-neutral organization and our primary funder is only the government, so Health Canada. So we get seed money to run different digital health initiatives. So in the past, it was, you know, EMR adoption across the country. So, they would give funding for that and other different things as well. I kind of call it a hybrid between government and vendors, and it's a lot of different things. Yeah, that's who InfoWay is, and we've been around for just under 20 years.
Yeah, that's quite a lifetime, essentially, or more than a
Yeah.
lifetime, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Patricia, if you would like to tell us about your career journey so far.
Sure. First, thank you so much for having me. So my background, I have a clinical background as well. I'm a radiographer. When I finished my graduation at the time, it was 2009 in Portugal, and it was very difficult to have a job in the public sector. So I managed to get some volunteering work to keep practicing. And then I had to shift my attention to the private sector within healthcare. So there, I got the opportunity to have a job at Sectra Iberia, which is Portugal and Spain. And I started as an application specialist and help desk first line. So it's basically where everyone starts from to get to know customers and so on. Sectra is a medical IT company, providing PACS software. And for who doesn't know what PACS is, it's a picture archiving and communication systems. We also provide RIS, radiology information systems, or VNA, vendor neutral archives, and other different applications. Yeah, and from there, I stayed a couple of years in Iberia, and then I moved on in search of new opportunities, and I immigrated to the UK since 2014, and I became a line manager, a service manager, and progressed to service operations and part of the management team. And I started leading teams and hiring people, of course, as part of leading the teams and making sure, that we achieve our targets. And it's been quite a journey over these past 10 years. And the last move that I've done is project management, so that it really complements all the operational management skill set that I have.
Well, that's amazing. And so you've both basically pivoted from, being at the forefront on the clinical side to the operational side of things. So, I mean, one of the reasons I wanted us to do this episode was, there's been a lot of digital transformation, especially during this COVID period. And, people talk about digital projects here and there, but how do you actually do it in practice? So I'll come to you first, Patricia. Like, tell us about, the work you do in terms of healthcare implementation projects. How does that work, from the very inception to actually people being able to use it?
Well, so I mean, I've worked with a variety of projects. So we do multiple things. We do, hardware refreshes, or we add on the customer base, we add on new products, or we install new installations within the customers, new customers. But I think the biggest and the most recent digital transformation has been pathology in the world of imaging. So radiology has been there for decades now, and now we are, with that experience, having it move to a new ology within the hospitals, and pathology is now gaining all the benefits that digital transformation can bring to their workflows. So that's the expertise that we are trying to bring to the implementing those projects.
So you mentioned pathology being a sort of new frontier in, in the company that you're involved with. Talk us through that. Like, tell us what are the benefits in the developed world and developing world.
Wow, pathology is this new shiny change to the different ologies, right? So we passed through this in radiology before, a few decades back. And now it's pathology turn since 2016, so it's quite recent. And I don't know if people who are listening will know, but basically the pathologists will read the slides from with microscopes, and those slide decks are moved from different areas for different experts. And even the remote reading, they had to use that the slide deck and the microscope under their arm, moving on to the other side to be able to read them. I've heard even cases like, for example, you know, needing experts from a different hospital, and they had to send a courier with the slides. So the digital transformation around pathology makes such a huge difference, because they scan those after they do the stains and the post processing of the slides, they scan them and they put it in the system, and it's then available anywhere where you have access to that system. So you can do telepathology, and you can do different multidisciplinary team meetings with, you know, in one system, having access to both CT exams, MRI exams, pathology exams all together, and it just makes everything so much faster and easier. You know,
that sounds phenomenal, because, you know, I can imagine a situation where, you know, in the developing world, for example, where they may not have access to experienced pathologists. If they had a system where they could locally prepare the pathology specimen, load it onto the system that you've described, and then they have access to this, you know, multinational, international expertise, and that could literally transform, you know, local clinical care. So this is something I'm quite excited about, this actually.
Yes.
Yeah, no, thank you for telling us about that. Yeah. So are you able to talk us through, like, what's the consultation like? Who goes out to find, because you're more in the private sector as opposed to the government sector, like Nabil. So in the private sector, how do you approach, you know, companies? Where do you know where their pain points are in terms of being able to provide them with something that they need?
Well, there's, of course, you know, public sector and private sector. So we work with both. It's a bit with exhibitions as well, the different exhibitions that we go to, RSNA, the Radiological Society of North America, or European Congress of Radiology. So it's there where we show off our cases, word of mouth, of course. And then, of course, when hospitals start to regionalize and consolidate, then if we do have a customer within that consolidation, it's easier, you know, to show our products and their experience, and then probably get a new, bigger tender with that.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. So we'll come to you, Nabil. Tell us about, you know, any, if there's any particular project that you could use as an example of how you implemented the IT project across Canada. Are you able to speak to that?
Yeah, I can speak to it broadly. So, you know, at InfoWay, you know, like, I'm responsible for prescriber deployment, adoption, quality strategy, workflow mapping specifically for the prescribing project, which is what our e-prescribing service is called. And that's across jurisdictions. I also support, you know, pharmacy relations and deployment, some other programs within InfoWay. And in terms of the consultation process, I believe there was a big stakeholder, you know, it was a jurisdictional scan, because there's a lot of stakeholders involved in digital health. So there's, you know, like this private sector, this public sector, you know, there's the patient, the patient groups, there's physician groups, pharmacy, there's, you name it. There's a lot of prescribers, you know, and there's nurse prescribers as well too. So there was a lot of stakeholder engagement. You know, another thing is, in Canada, there's, you know, 10 provinces, 3 territories. So it's almost like dealing with, 13 different countries, I like to put it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, things vary by province. For example, in certain provinces, we might be able to, you know, embed ourselves within an EMR program, because maybe they don't have an EMR yet, right? Some of the smaller provinces don't. Others, we would have to do different things. Overall, in general, you know, it's partnering with EHR and pharmacy management systems for conformance, because the conformance process, which is, you know, like, to make sure it abides by privacy laws, and you got to abide by the most strictest, whoever has the strictest in the country, it's the safest bet to go by that, right? On the pharmacy side, it's working with large and small chains. Also, it was, you know, looking at what's going on in the globe, because Canada was actually quite behind when it came to e-prescribing. Like, the United States has had it for almost 20 years, UK had it for 13 years, and we just started about three years ago, right? So who's doing it well, who, you know, lessons learned. Estonia is actually one of the jurisdictions that's done quite well with it. Other things, you know, payment and sustainability models, a few different things are being explored there, whether it's, you know, like a small fee per transaction. They're still sorting that out. Education, right, and change management. So whether that's through, you know, faculty partnerships, CMEs, there's actually a CME that I worked on that's on the Prescribe It website as well. And government relations, right, because you have so many different players over here. So that's probably there's so many different facets. I think that would be the best way to describe it. There's a lot of moving parts and things change.
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely sounds like a mammoth task when, like you said, you're dealing with almost 13 different governments, essentially. So So you talked about, you know, stakeholder engagement. And so how do you go from the stakeholder engagement, you know, and passing all the privacy laws, all the intricacies of the microenvironment? How do you go from that to actually getting it into the hands of the clinicians who need, you know, the IT?
So from there, once all this is said and done, there's, you know, like a, they have to fill out an expression of interest form. And then, you know, like they go through it, they, you know, the different things are done, you know, change management process, because, you know, different physicians and prescribers and pharmacies have different comfort level when it comes to digital health, right? So that will kind of determine, okay, maybe they need a little bit more handholding, right? Or maybe, you know, they're fine with self-directed training and things like that. So it kind, that's kind of how they've done it. Right now, it's not mandatory in Canada as of yet. Yeah, I would say that's there's a whole process that happens on the clinic side, and there's also a process that's very similar process on the pharmacy side, because everything needs to kind of be chatting with each other.
Okay. And typically, how long would a project like this? So, you know, say you have a group of hospitals in the middle of London somewhere, and you need to implement a project. Roughly, how long would you typically give them as an implementation period?
So right now, actually, hospitals are not enabled to prescribe it. They were doing it in phases. So we started with the clinics. And hospitals, they're just in pilot stage right now within a couple of hospitals between Toronto and Ottawa. So for the clinic side, once they do an engagement process, probably end to end, probably within a month, they can be started up, give or take.
That's pretty quick, actually. Is that the same in sort of your system, Patricia?
I think with imaging, from my experience, it takes a long time, much more than just 1 month for sure. I mean, especially in the public sector, because of the it has to go into tender, and then different vendors will apply, and you have to, you know, fulfill all the requirements to be able to win. And then when you win, you move on to the implementation, and that process can take years. I've seen customers that start that process a couple of years before the current contract is ending, so they just, you know, search the market for what's out there to be able to create those the requirements that they need. So that's the in the public sector, it's much slower.
What would you say in the private sector? Is it quicker?
I would say it is quicker, I believe, because it's even the funding is different, and it's less bureaucracy in that sense.
Yeah, I can imagine it is, because I suspect in the private sector, you know, if you want to acquire a new system, there is the momentum to do so. And like you said, less bureaucracy. So Nabil, you were going to say something about the public versus private system.
And Patricia said a few good things. I talked about that 1 month, that's post-conformance. The pre-conformance can take 12 to 18 months, up to 2 years, depending on which EMR it is. And depends on how widespread it's used and things like that. So that can that part can take a while. So, but post that, then like implementation is usually quite fast after that. But all the pre-work is a long time.
Yeah. So coming back to the pre-work side of things, so both your companies, you know, develop unique products for the market. That development stage, are you able to give an idea of how long typically that normally takes?
From a development, for us, it's kind of more of, you know, established EMRs, and it's more like, you know, making them conform so they have that functionality. Okay. That functionality takes about 12 to 18 months on average to enable it, because, you know, because we're vendor neutral, we're working with all the major vendors on, you know, helping them get on board with this as well. So, but yeah, that part can take approximately that much, depending.
Okay. And what about you, Patricia?
I'd say it's very similar to what Nabil is saying. We, of course, develop it centrally, and then it's flexible to a point that the configurations, then the workflows and everything is then adapted to the needs of each individual customer. Of course, it will depend on their workflows and how best we can improve them and make them more efficient. So it really depends on what we are looking for, the size, the needs, the different integrations with the different other vendors as well.
Yeah, so you're right. So I'll come down to the implementation side of things. You know, so from a clinician's perspective, having to deal with multiple systems is a bit of an irritation, especially when you have a short clinic. You've got a clinic and you've got loads of patients coming through. How do you navigate around trying to amalgamate as many systems as possible, or having APIs where your systems talk to, or, you know, your new product will talk to whatever existing products they have, and you don't have to do multiple logins? Is that something that you deal with, or?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And right now, the way Prescribe It works is that you would normally just log into your EMR as how you do it. And then depending on the EMR, some automatically trigger like a two-factor authentication to a cell phone. And you would just enter that code in, and that would be good for 12 hours or depending on the system that way. So that's just an extra layer of protection that some provinces wanted. So that's one way of making it quick. I know that's not, you know, ideally how it should be, but as of this point, we're kind of at that point.
I agree. I mean, security is key, especially in healthcare. So for us within imaging, I believe that, you know, to have a seamless workflow, it's important that the clinicians, the users, they are in one workstation and they have all the tools they need in this application instead of moving on from workstation to workstation and spending time there. So the integrations with the different other imaging processing applications is key. From our application, launching others with one single sign-on is very handy, and it makes the life much easier. Less clicks, less time spent. So yeah. Super beneficial.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely the sort of the user experience side of things, which, you know, means that your implementation is probably a lot quicker and easier and easily adopted by clinicians. So, I mean, you kind of already mentioned it, Nabil, in that your e-prescribing systems, what you've looked at, sort of your unique selling way of doing it, is to try to integrate into, you know, electronic health records and medical records. Have you found challenges with doing that, or, you know, have the companies who traditionally provide these electronic health records, are they reluctant to have APIs with your system, or is it easier just because it's a government agency, they're more open?
I would say they're more open. It's the whole rigorous process of going through conformance that can sometimes frustrate people, because there's so many different, like there's probably a couple hundred page document that they gotta conform to and go through it. Because they're a government agency, they're, you know, a little bit more prone to wanting to do it. Yeah, it's been quite interesting when it comes to different challenges. One of the challenges was, you know, operationally, you know, like if it matches quite closely to what a prescriber might do. You know, they might be more likely to adopt it. So depending on the EMR system, that was one way that we tried as best as possible to kind of influence the EMR vendors to do that. But in general, change management is, you know, a big factor. You know, physician onboarding, accepting it because it's not mandated at the at this time. Mm-hmm. It's good practice to do, but other things, you know, different workflow optimizations on the pharmacy side, because there's the other side of it as well. You know, initially was a challenge, but now there's largest chains are now all on board with e-prescribing, which is great. And hospitals is another thing, but that's being done also as a next phase, and privacy, two-factor authentication and things like that. So I would say those have been some of the challenges in implementing.
Yeah, no, that's pretty cool. So like, you know, the NHS app, which was launched, you know, not too long ago, has recently launched a service where you can order your repeat prescriptions online via the app and it gets delivered to you. You don't even have to go to the pharmacy to do so. Is that something that's provided in your system as well?
It's not provided within the system, but on the pharmacy side, if they could choose to, you know, do that, if that's how they implemented it, because, you know, like with the pandemic, especially, you know, deliveries have gone up, things like that. So it ultimately depends on how the pharmacy wants to do it and how they operate, right?
Okay. All right. And you mentioned a pandemic there. So coming up to the pandemic, how has that influenced your implementation process across Canada? Has there been challenges, or has it actually allowed it to frog leap the whole change management process?
Yeah, I think it actually accelerated a lot of things, because, you know, e-prescribing is very conducive to virtual care. So last year there was a massive, when, you know, especially when the closures happened, there was a massive surge. I think there was over 150% increase from January to December on who's been using it. Definitely, I think it's accelerated it quite tremendously. I would even say a couple of years.
Oh, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. Have there been any challenges with the pandemic that you've had to navigate with implementation?
There used to be the option for on-site. So we had to quickly transition to, you know, offsite, you know, implementation and things like that, whether, you know, you enter a new jurisdiction. So, but it was quite a seamless pivot, because there's already a couple of people that were electing to do it in that sense anyways. We just started making that the main process.
Yeah. So it sounds like, if anything, the pandemic actually still helped in that sense anyway.
In the digital health world, absolutely.
Yeah. And Patricia, what's been your experience? Do you think the pandemic has helped with your field?
That's for sure. Within imaging, I mean, teleradiology started to be the norm. People had to be at home and they took workstations from the hospitals back home and started reporting there. Of course, there were challenges with that, the bandwidths, internet, good internet connections, security, making sure it's all in line. But from an implementation of projects point of view, we had to start doing remote trainings and we had remote meetings. I mean, there was some benefits out of there because we weren't traveling as much. And wasting, in quotes, time on those travels. So we can easily be accessible over any Teams, GoToMeeting, any other application that's out there, Zoom, where we are in now. So these applications helped a lot and improved and helped the implementation of projects for sure. In terms of challenges, it's really the lack of, you know, human interaction. I think people are used to that, and not having that with a project, it's more complicated. But from a business point of view, I think challenges can be more about, you know, the lack of those exhibitions that along the time, I mean, in a few years, we will see the impact of not being able to, you know, be on those exhibitions and showing our products, etc. So for now, healthcare is what's needed because of this pandemic. It has to be, we have to focus on patient care. Of course, other ologies started dropping down the quantity of imaging. We have noticed that a lot because they are focusing on COVID imaging, lung mainly, CT scans and those type of, and other ologies have been put behind a little. So there is a big backlog that we will have to catch up when we are over this. Weird times.
It definitely is. And I think you highlighted quite a few things there in terms of, you know, adapting to offsite training and how do you onboard a team to a new product that you can't physically show them the benefits of. Yes, you know, virtual training is useful and is helpful, but it's not the same, like you said, as being on site and showing people practically. Now, so some conferences are holding online at the moment, and some conferences I've been to have, you know, sort of a virtual, you know, break time where you can see some of the videos from sponsors. So typically, you know, any company sponsoring or showcasing at conferences. Is that something that, you know, companies in your industry are doing?
Yeah, for sure. That's what they had to do to adapt to this new technology. And it has been virtual demos all the time.
Do you think that's taken off in terms of increased market or increased business?
I think so. It has a lot of possibility there because people that couldn't go to those exhibitions, especially, for example, the RSNA that was in Chicago, not everyone would go. So now they were able to virtually attend, which before they couldn't. So there is opportunity there, that's for sure.
I think that's excellent, actually, in that, you know, as a company, you have to keep looking for the opportunities, even when, you know, some doors close. So I'm going to come to you, Nabil. You know, there's been a big opioid, you know, let's call it pandemic in itself, across Northern America. Have you found that the e-prescribing products that you have has helped to curb some of that, or has it provided any business intelligence in terms of what areas are, you know, hit spots for this?
That's a great question when it comes to, you know, the benefits that we've seen from that. And I would say, you know, there's definitely more visibility into, you know, fraud and adherence sort of things. Because in the system, what happens is that, you know, when a script is sent to the pharmacy, when the patient picks it up, there's actually a passive dispense notification that becomes a permanent part of the record. So, you know, I would say there's definitely been some benefits, and it's opened up the conversations for clinicians and patients, you know, like, okay, for example, I'll give an example, like a blood pressure pill. Okay, you know, why aren't you taking that? You know, maybe the patient can't afford it. Maybe there's side effects. So I think with respect to benefits, you know, patients, prescribers, pharmacists, you know, the healthcare system, they've all seen different benefits, probably from the patient side, fewer medication-related errors. You know, there's no need to interpret bad writing, less risk of losing prescriptions, lower privacy breaches, more time to spend with prescribers and pharmacists, you know, rather than, you know, going back and forth, scribbling on pieces of paper. You know, you can actually securely message within the system as well too, which is a lot of people have liked that and do attachments, lower wait times. Prescribers have found also, you know, they've said, you know, fewer prescribers, better management of chronic conditions. Pharmacists have also found the same thing, improved communication, you know, rather than waiting a couple days. Now they're able to kind of chat with the prescriber within a few hours and get different things resolved anecdotally. And, you know, adherence and safety also leads to fewer, you know, emergency visits. So a lot of different things, and probably a lowering in cost in the system as well. And all of that's being studied right now.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. And I think this is one of the things, you know, putting a business school hat on things now, because, you know, we're talking about opportunities that open up in new areas. And I think those are certainly business insights that the healthcare system will definitely benefit from. in the imaging world, Patricia, have there been any sort of business analytic capabilities that have developed?
Yes, that's for sure. Especially with the pandemic and everything, more AI companies focused on areas to identify COVID related symptoms, they started to come up, and partnering with those companies is important and bringing them to light. So I would say that monitoring the business intelligence, the AI, the data analysis on understanding, we have different other monitoring systems, for example, for dose radiology based. So any equipment that is producing overdosage, we do monitor those and provide outliers and warnings and to help mitigate them in the future.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. And do either of you have blockchain use in the health system, digital health system that you use or produce rather?
Not yet. It's quite expensive to implement at this point, but different things are being explored all the time. So,
and any in the imaging world, Patricia?
Not that I'm aware of.
No. Okay. And do you think this is something that would be a possibility in the future? Because where people worry about access to their medical records, a lot of patients want to be in control of their own health and therefore want everything that on their mobile phone at their own fingertips. So do you think blockchain technology in the use of all the digital health products out there would be beneficial in terms of tracing logins and things like that?
Yeah, I definitely think so. That would be ideal. In Canada, they're also kind of building like this pipeline where different applications can all hook up to, like healthcare applications and things like that. So, somewhere within that would be quite beneficial.
I agree within imaging for sure that's the way we are moving towards. It's more about the security, and we know from the WannaCry event that, and other events that are coming through, that you need to have really secure systems to be able to have it on the phone. We do have that on the phone, on iPads, and move the images across, but it's just security is key, and collaboration between the different vendors on that.
Yeah, and I think you just hit the nail on the head in terms of collaboration between all the players in the market, and also with regards to cybersecurity. Like, what do you think the health industry has to do to make sure that the cybersecurity side of things is where it should be at for us to then be able to truly trust that our healthcare data is not going to fall into the wrong hands?
I think from an imaging perspective, there's a lot of hardware, a lot of operating systems that are outdated out there. It's unfortunate, but it's a reality. There's quite a lot of work in putting that up to date. I think the WannaCry was a big eye-opener in that sense, because we identified, we have some lessons learned from that situation for sure. And I think NHS Digital and especially the NHS trusts, they are all focused now more than ever before to be up to date in their patching, in all the requirements needed, the firewalls, and of course that security has become now number one, because it's it's a big responsibility of having that data breached, not only legally of course, but it's
it's a heavy cost as well, because exactly. Companies get fined these days when there's a data breach. My next question is about how your background as a radiographer, how has that helped where you are now and all the projects that you've worked in over the past few years?
So for me, it's been really key, because having that experience in the front end with the patients, with the workflow, with imaging and even a bit of the products that we are selling, the applications itself, I can understand the pain points and then easier to understand the needs. So within my career, within service, within operations, it's easier to empathize and to understand what people are complaining about, if it's service or what they need, new additions to the system and those change requests. So yeah, it's been pivotal.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. And for you, Nabil, how's your, because you've had a few careers in lifetime. So how has the nursing background, the pharmacy background, and all the work you've done sort of in community health, how has that helped your role?
Yeah, I think it's provided a unique vantage point because, you know, I'd kind of understand what happens from prescribing to dispensing all the way onto a hospital floor. I think, especially with relationship management and things that I'm doing right now, it allows me to kind of understand where they're coming from, understand the workflows and how we can help them and build value together. I think that's how it's helped me.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. Because I think you both just really mentioned one thing that's key is being in the, you know, putting yourself in the position of the person who's using the product and understanding what that journey is and actually simulating that journey with the products that you're building and, you know, in how you onboard your products to them as well. So I think those are definitely unique insights that's probably, you know, someone coming from a purely business, purely project management background will probably not have. So, you know, I think if anything, this whole pandemic is probably going to birth many clinicians from all backgrounds, merging into, you know, IT. And I think that's for, you know, for the good of healthcare as a whole. So yeah, no, that's truly a good thing. So I will end with one final question, which I want both of you to answer. So if I was, you know, I don't know, an entrepreneur, healthcare startup, I have a digital product that I would like to, you know, spread across Canada or spread across the NHS or spread across private healthcare system, how would you describe, what would you advise me to do and how would you expect my journey in terms of, you know, making my product a digital transformation, digital, you know, change management project? Like, walk me through that whole process.
Yeah, you know, Canada Health InfoWay has published some resources about, you know, digital health apps and, you know, what are some standards that they should adhere to? How does a clinician choose it? And it's about a 50-page document. So I think, firstly, being aware of resources around you, you know, like doing that research. Are there documents out there? Are there standards and things like that? You know, like you might have an idea, but see what's out there, right, for you.
Okay.
Yeah, I
think
within the imaging world, I would say for sure, understand your stakeholders' needs and adapt, be able to be flexible to adapt to their needs. Especially, there's a lot of big players out there. So that's a big fight to get, you know, if you are looking at higher regional hospitals. So maybe start small and get your footprint to be able to scale up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's truly excellent advice because I think, like you said, really get to know your customer, you know, put in the business school hat on, get to know your customer, get to know what their pain points are, get to know how you can solve their pain points at a fraction of the cost that they probably are willing to pay, because that always comes into the you know, forefront at the end of the day. And like you said, you know, if you have very old IT systems, then, you know, one will need to be prepared to actually either provide an API that works with those and still does provide security, but also be able to update to a certain level where you're giving them something that will change their practice.
Is it okay if I add one more
point? Yeah, please do.
also be aware of some of the resources that are within the business school as well too. You know, you have like innovation hubs, you have Imperial Launch that can you can actually get mentored on how to do that. So I just thought I'd throw that out there. There's also actually lots of resources within the business school.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much, both of you, for coming on and sharing your experiences. I'm sure everyone would enjoy listening to your words of wisdom. Thank you.
Thank you very much.